That mean I can leave?
No.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. It is Wednesday, March 15th, 2017. We are the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources, and you are all welcome to
move up.
yeah, that's right. I'm sure there are thousands and thousands of people watching this particular hearing today, but I have to say, in all honesty, it is a pleasure to have such a relaxed hearing today. So we'll go ahead and do the public hearings. We have three bills that came to us from the House where I think they all passed with very little dispute. And so why don't we do them while we're waiting for Senator Roblin? So I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2254. And Beth, could you tell us what this is?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2254 would add an exception to the labeling requirements for individual packages or wrapped units of agricultural or horticultural commodities shipped in bulk. If the commodity is either being exported from the United States, or I should say not either, and is being exported from the U.S. and is transported in a shipping container that meets all the other labeling requirements. There is a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact and no subsequent referral.
Okay, great. I feel like this is something that was touched on last week. No? Anyway, product safety, labeling, modernization, something agriculture.
Cannabis.
Good afternoon.
You're welcome, Lisa.
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture. So House Bill 2254 comes to you as a statutory cleanup. About a year ago, we had some of the fruit and vegetable industry come to us with an issue, and they wanted to be able to send their clamshells, basically with cherries, overseas and have them labeled in the market in the appropriate language. But Oregon law does not allow that. And so what we've brought forward is the ability for our exporters to take these master cartons, which are a multitude of smaller cartons, do one label for them, export them, and then allow them to be labeled in the receiving country's language.
And that's once they've arrived.
Once they've arrived, exactly. And then if they were to come back to the U.S. for some reason or back to Oregon, then they would have to meet our labeling requirements. That really is how simple we believe this bill is. So it's allowing the fruit and vegetable industry to do what they need to do.
Okay. Vice Chair Olson, you have any questions?
You guys are okay with it?
Yes, ODA is okay with it. We brought it forward so that we could help them do their business in an efficient and effective way.
Okay. Thank you very much, Lisa. I'm going to close the public hearing then on House Bill 2254. We will schedule it for work session very soon and open a public hearing on House Bill 2255. Oh, I'm sorry, Beth.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2255 would make explicit ODA's authority to adopt rules relating to the safety or marketability of milk or dairy products. There is a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and no subsequent referral.
Thank you. Yeah, this is the one that sounded familiar. So tell us how this fits into the grand scheme of public safety.
Very good. Again, for the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture. And with me, it's Stephanie Page, who's our Director of Food Safety and Animal Health within ODA. So House Bill 2255 is basically a bill that brings Oregon law into conformance with federal requirements for the pasteurized milk ordinance. Dairy is a very heavily regulated sector and dairy products, and it really matches up the parts and pieces for the current ordinance today. And there have been changes in it over time. And I can walk you, or Stephanie can walk you through the changes if you would like us to.
Yeah, for the record, you might as well tell us what's changing here.
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Stephanie Page with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. As Deputy Director Hansen said, one thing that the bill does is to explicitly allow us to adopt the pasteurized milk ordinance by reference or other federal rules or requirements related to milk and milk products, allowing them for interstate shipment. The other thing that the bill does is it allows us to suspend a producer's license for a first violation. That is generally not something that we do. Our goal is to educate producers into compliance, but there are a couple instances that where the pasteurized milk ordinance requires that, and we are not currently able to do it because of a prohibition in the statute.
Yes, Senator Roblin.
So this is only pasteurized milk products, so it wouldn't be if we decide to become the fermented milk capital of the world instead of Asia. And kefir comes into being. Mm-hmm. Would this bill be regulating that as well, or is that going to go through a fermentation kind of thing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, the fluid milk that is produced for processing into yogurt would still be subject to this ordinance, but then we work with the processors separately as well for the fermented products.
Okay, thank you both.
Thank you.
I will close our public hearing on House Bill 2255 and predict a similar fate to this one. And I will open now a public hearing on House Bill 2327A. Beth, you want to tell us what this is?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2327 makes a number of changes to the OWEB statutes, including provisions related to liability coverage that's required by grant recipients. There is a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and no subsequent referral.
Good afternoon, Chair Dembrough, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. I'm Renee Davis, Deputy Director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Our Executive Director, Maida Lofsgaard, sends her regrets for not being able to attend the hearing. She's actually attending a listening session in Central Oregon today with some of our stakeholders about a strategic plan update that we're embarking upon. So I believe you have written testimony about House Bill 2327, and it's also posted on OLA, so I'll just briefly walk you through the key components of the bill. So by way of very quick background, OWEB has a mission of helping to protect and restore healthy watersheds and native habitats in support of also thriving communities and healthy economies around the state. The primary way that the agency meets its mission is via a significant grant program that provides resources to local groups and communities around the state to undertake voluntary restoration and conservation work in conjunction with landowners. So House Bill 2327 really revitalizes some aspects of the agency's authorizing statutes and also completes some cleanup of other statutes. So I'll walk you through those key points now. There are seven sections, which you hopefully have in front of you with the written testimony. Section one focuses, as Beth mentioned, on liability insurance. So this new language proposes to require all OWEB grantees to obtain liability insurance at a level that's commensurate with the activities that are being conducted and implemented on the ground. It does relate to Section 4 of the bill, which references current liability protection that's available via the Department of Administrative Services. That current liability coverage, though, is limited in nature. It's fairly modest level, and it also is only for watershed councils rather than the whole host of grantees with which OWEB engages as part of its grant programs. So the proposed language would require coverage at appropriate levels by all OWEB grantees, watershed councils, soil and water conservation districts, land trusts, and others. The key piece is that those costs associated with liability insurance coverage would be an eligible cost as part of OWEB grants. So we want to make sure that we give folks the ability to secure the resources necessary to have coverage to do that work on the ground. We have actually been reaching out to stakeholders so that they understand how to assess the need for the appropriate level of liability insurance and understand some tools and mechanisms to secure that through time. So those have been constructive conversations, no surprises on that front. I would just reference that this proposed statutory change does not in any way impact the immunity protections for landowners in separate statute for those landowners who are engaging in voluntary restoration, whether it be through OWEB's programs, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, or in conjunction with Oregon Department of Forestry. So I will move to section two, and I'm happy to answer questions during, or we can take questions at that.
Yeah, let me ask a question. You know, since the grants are presumably going to pay for the liability coverage, is it not less expensive to have the coverage kind of centralized up front as opposed to their having to secure individual liability coverage?
Yes, and that's actually been something, Chair Dembro, that is something that we've been working through with councils to encourage them. We have a separate, and I think it will be mentioned later, Watershed Council Capacity Grant Program. So we are encouraging those groups who receive capacity funding, watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts, to consider liability coverage at a larger scale. As part of that grant making, we then would have the ability for them to get the necessary riders if they are undertaking particularly complicated projects on the ground. I'm thinking things like large channel reconnection projects that might have greater risk associated with them, and have the ability through individual restoration grants to get riders at a higher level to ensure sufficient coverage for those more complicated projects above and beyond what a standard package might provide to them.
But it's going to be incumbent on them to go out and seek the liability insurance, or can they do it through some more centralized entity?
Chair Dembro, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah.
So at this point, it is incumbent upon them. We do have a statewide network, the Network for Oregon Watershed Councils, and also the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts. So those statewide groups certainly could help on some of the coordination aspects, especially for smaller councils that might struggle, have fewer staff, and could really benefit from that coordination function. So that's something that certainly we can pursue additional conversations with the statewide organizations about. Okay, so moving to section two, this really is focused on cleanup of existing statute. This would repeal language that specifically references the Healthy Streams Partnership. This partnership was formed approximately 20 years ago by an agreement among agencies and a whole host of diverse interest groups. The group, however, has not been functional for many years. It does not mean that work that's in the spirit of the Healthy Streams Partnership does not continue. It does through initiatives such as the Clean Water Partnership and Oregon Department of Agriculture's strategic implementation areas. This is simply a proposed cleanup to no longer reference specifically the Healthy Streams Partnership in statute, given that it's not functional at this point. Moving to section three, this is a somewhat more substantive topic in nature. It's around the composition of the OWEB board. We have a very large board, 17 members. We have 6 at-large members, 5 members from other boards and commissions. Those in total, 11 members are voting members. We do have 6 non-voting members currently representing Oregon State University Extension, and then 5 federal agencies. One federal agency not currently represented on the OWEB board is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. For reasons that likely 20 years ago made good sense, given some of the controversial topics that were at hand then. However, Fish and Wildlife Service is a really critical partner in restoration and conservation in Oregon, not only because of their funding, but they provide really key technical assistance to local groups around the state. So the agency believes that adding them as a non-voting member to the board would really help to provide guidance on a broad array of issues, ranging from sage-grouse in eastern Oregon to coastal estuary issues in, for example, Senator Roblin's district. One piece that's not currently in House Bill 2327, I will mention, though, it has come up in some conversations in the building, the topic of potentially considering term limits for non-voting members. Our voters have an 8-year term limit. The non-voting members do not, so I simply offer that as a topic that has been raised but currently is not in the bill language, and the agency is neutral on that topic. So moving forward to section four, this proposed section proposes to repeal that language around the DAS liability insurance coverage that I described previously. It also would align statutory language with current requirements under the Watershed Council capacity grants that I mentioned. Currently, the language requires reporting to county governing bodies only if there is more than one watershed council in a county. We would propose that the language be aligned so that all watershed councils receiving capacity funding submit an annual report to all government entities that designated the council, so ensuring good communication with the authorizing entities. Section 5 is not new language. It is simply retaining language from a section of statute that we are proposing for repeal later. So really just retaining that key language around OWEP's watershed enhancement program and the opportunity for volunteers to engage in voluntary restoration around the state. Section 6 focuses on reporting two key components of this. One, the agency is required to submit biennial reports about the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. Currently, on January 15th of odd number years, that means we are reporting about biennial accomplishments with about 6 months left in the biennium. The language proposes to change that deadline to January 15th of even number years. This is simply a remnant in statute of a time when we did not have even year sessions, so proposing to align that. And then repealing one small component of the language around the required reporting, focused on watershed and key habitat conditions in each drainage basin. The agency does not have the resources or data infrastructure to report at a consistent level across all drainage basins, so simply repealing that language. And then finally, Section 7, two additional repeals, one focused on ORS 541-920, which primarily focuses on coordination with the State Service Center for GIS, which no longer exists within the state structure, so proposing to repeal that language but retain the watershed enhancement language I mentioned in Section 5, and then also repeal language that requires other natural resources agencies to submit written reports to OWEB, given that the internet exists now and most agencies post their reports online. This requirement is now obsolete. So I will stop there and see if you have any questions.
Any questions, colleagues? Mm-hmm. So why does this get to be called the Oregon Plan? Mm-hmm. That seems pretty big for just OWEB.
Chair Deborah, this harks back to the origins of the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds when the agency was tapped with a lot of coordination responsibility and not necessarily always the structure to do so.
The modified or the modernization.
Right. No, I think this makes a lot of sense. So thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Great. Okay, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2327 and open a work session on Senate Bill 18. Which has to do with the Food Safety Modernization Act.
Chair Dimmer, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated 3/2/17.
Vice Chair Olson has moved to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated March 2nd, 2017. And what do these amendments do?
Mr. Chair, members, they really cleaned up the original bill language. I don't understand that there are any real substantive differences, but it's cleanup language that directs, authorizes the department to administer and enforce the duties and functions and powers that the states receive under the federal law.
Okay. Any discussion? Hey, is there any objection to the Dash 2 amendments? Okay, they are adopted. Vice Chair?
Chair Dimmer, I move Senate Bill 18 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 18 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion of this bill?
Yes, I think Senator Bart Sugar should carry.
Need a second for that?
Okay, is there any opposition to the bill? Okay, seeing none, motion carries. And sure, Senator Bart Sugar will carry this bill.
Excellent.
Okay, with that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 18. And colleagues, seeing no further business before us, and unless we want to open up the topic of climate change, global warming, you name it. I mean, we're open.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
As much as I'd love for us to do that, it just doesn't seem to be posted, so I think we're not being germane to the agenda.
That's right.
A stickler for details always, the chair of the Judiciary Committee. Okay, therefore, colleagues, we are adjourned. Ready? Okay, therefore, colleagues, we are adjourned.